I was the first one in my immediate family to graduate from college. And I actually, to come out here that first summer, I missed my graduation, which broke my mom's heart at one level. And then again, my dad's thinking, okay, I got a college graduate. He's going thousands of miles to work in the laundry. What, you know, again, as I said, what a genius did I raise. But, you know, later that summer, and I started an early mayonnaise that first season and ended in September. And rather than make me take the Greyhound bus back, which is a whole other experience, but they decided to come out and pick me up that summer. And here's, along with the fact that I fell in love with this place and had this life-changing experience, and to your point, decided I never want this to end, my folks who were questioning my sanity and intelligence at the first, you know, in May, when I made this decision, I drove out and from New York. And I remember when they showed up, my mother told me, I'm a little worried. I think your dad's going to quit his job over, you know, many, many years, because he's fallen in love with this, you know, starting in the Black Hills in South Dakota and the Badlands, and then out here. He got bitten by the bug pretty quickly.
That was Rick Honinghausen. Rick has 28 years experience in Yellowstone National Park. I have been asked so many times, how did I end up in the outdoor world? How do I do what I do for a living? And it always is answered the same way. I had to get a start in the outdoor world somewhere, and my start came from working in a national park. In my case, it was the first national park that we ever had, and that is Yellowstone National Park. I worked out there when I was in college. I got a job in Yellowstone National Park as a room attendant at Lake Hotel, which meant that I was scrubbing toilets. And pretty much to this day, that's still my favorite summer that I've ever spent. So I've suggested it to a lot of people, including my son, my nephew, my niece, my son's girlfriend, and probably just about every client that's ever come across my boat when they ask me if I've got any ideas about how their son or daughter could do something cool in the outdoors. I always suggest that working in a national park is a really great opportunity. You get to spend a lot of incredible time in an incredible place. It doesn't have to be Yellowstone National Park. There's lots of national parks, and there's lots of opportunities to work there. Anything from being a maid to waiting tables to doing something far more. And as we find out in Rick's case, you can actually make a career out of it. So I reached out to try to get a good answer for a How-To Tuesday on what would be the appropriate steps to take to get a job in a national park. And what I found was a story of someone who had followed their passion right into Yellowstone National Park and ends up making a career out of it. And he's the head of marketing for Xanterra at this point. So I had a lot of questions, and I loved this conversation with Rick Honinghausen. All right, Rick Honinghausen from Xanterra. Man, thank you for spending a little time with me today. I had originally reached out to Xanterra because I do a little 10-minute show called How To Tuesday, and I've had so many people reach out to me because of my experience working in a national park, asking me how someone would do that. And I kind of reached out to Xanterra with an email, and you were nice enough to call me back, and we talked for a little bit. And I found that your story was far more interesting than just a little 10-minute show on how to work in a national park, which of course we'll get to. But I was incredibly interested in your story because you have made a career out of working in national parks. So how did all this happen for you?
Well, and thanks again for having me today.
Of course.
I started as a seasonal. I started the way you did. My first summer here was 1980. I'd finished college and was looking for a way, in some ways, I guess, to avoid the real world. But at the same time, a friend of mine had gotten a job out here, and I never thought one could get one. I'd only seen Yellowstone on television and dreamt about the day I might get to see it in person, but I never, ever thought it would happen. So his friend got a job. He was a maid, hired as a housekeeping. And so I picked up an application, sent it, and hoped for the best. Next thing you know, I got a job. And coming out here to work in the laundry, of all things. So I'll tell you, my father was wondering about me. The first one to graduate from college, and first thing you're going to do is go thousands of miles away and work in the laundry with your college degree. You know, way to go, genius. But, you know, it was calling, and I did it. And I came out here, and it was the best summer of my life in a long list of great summers and winters and times. That was really pivotal for me. And I ended up working three different summers here. I'd go back to Syracuse, where I'm originally from, and find a job to hold me over until I could go back to Yellowstone the next summer. But it was a summer job that turned out to be so much more. It was, you know, this world's first national park, and I love being here. I met a lot of people, and it turned out to be just much more of that than just a summer job. So, you know, fate, as we'll, I'm sure, talk about, kind of entered in. But the long story short is I've got about 28 years now here in Yellowstone, and most of that is, you know, in a year-round position. And wow. I also was fortunate to have 4 years in the Everglades, which is where I first started my full-time work with the in the national park. So it all started with a summer laundry job.
Wow. And then what interested me most about talking to you more in depth about your story was that you also raised a family in Yellowstone National Park. That's incredible.
It is incredible. And another, you know, some of that fate I just referenced earlier, I guess, played in. And in back in 80, I met a lot of people from all over the country. And one of them was a young lady from Georgia, who ultimately showed poor judgment and agreed to marry me. And, you know, the rest is history. But with that, obviously we share the love of Yellowstone and all parks for that matter. But I came and went a couple of times. And while one of the periods we were away from the park is when we had two daughters. But I got to come back here, got this job, the director of marketing, in 1998. And when at that point, we had a 3- and a 5-year-old. And so we all came back as a family. And those girls are now, you know, 27. Those women are now 27 and 24. But they grew up here. They went to elementary school here in the park. They went to middle school and high school just outside the park. But in Gardner, Montana. But yeah, they grew up here. They both ended up working here as well as seasonal employees over the course of that time. And they met a lot of people from around the world as a result. It's not for everybody, but I can tell you that it is for folks with mind frames like my wife and I, and I'm sure many other people, it's a beautiful place to raise a family.
Man, that is incredible. That is one of the most incredible childhoods I could imagine. I mean, you're in this magical place. It's truly a magical place. And every afternoon, you're probably seeing new and different things. I can't imagine that there's a lot of people that have experienced that childhood. How many people do you think are raised or even, I guess, there's a possibility that people are being born in the park?
You know, previous years, you know, back earlier in the century, certainly people were born here. Now, fortunately, for me, it's about a 40 or 50, I should say an hour, 50-mile drive to the nearest hospital to actually have a baby the old-fashioned way, I guess, in a hospital. But, I suspect over the years it could be measured in hundreds. I'd be surprised if it's thousands. I mean, there are people certainly come here with children like I did. But I have a neighbor, several neighbors, our controller, our executive director of operations, each have, you know, children who basically were born, you know, while they were in the parks. So, and in Yellowstone specifically. So, and there's park service folks the same way, the year-round folks. Wow. So it's not unheard of, but it's probably not a huge fraternity of children who've been born in the park. A little bit larger group raised like mine. Mm-hmm. And tons of, I would say, quite a few bit more romances that had started in the park with folks, yes, coming together like I did for a summer and meet somebody who's special and it all works out. So, you know, it's far more in many ways, as we're saying, than a summer job.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I had a very similar experience. I just went out there. I had no expectations whatsoever. Other than National Geographic magazine, I knew nothing of Yellowstone National Park. And I go out there and I was completely amazed at everything I saw. I mean, I called it a magical place before. You go out there and start working, and every day it seems like you're just becoming more aware of just how incredible that place is. And, you know, you get to the end of your season and you're kind of like, I haven't seen enough. I haven't done enough. There are more things that I want to do than I have done, and I'm ready to do this again. And I think that, you know, when I was there, there were many, many people that just decided they weren't going back to college. Other people that said they were past college and they just said, you know what, this is pretty awesome. I don't know how you're going to get better than this. And they just stay there. That happens a lot. And I guess that eventually that probably happened to you, right?
Oh, it certainly did. I was the first one in my immediate family to graduate from college. And I actually, to come out here that first summer, I missed my graduation, which broke my mom's heart at one level. And then again, my dad's thinking, okay, I got a college graduate. He's going thousands of miles to work in the laundry. What, you know, again, as I said, what a genius did I raise. But, you know, later that summer, and I started an early mandate that first season and ended in September. And rather than make me take the Greyhound bus back, which is a whole other experience, but they decided to come out and pick me up that summer. And here's, along with the fact that I fell in love with this place and had this life-changing experience, and to your point, decided I never want this to end, my folks who were questioning my sanity and intelligence at the first, you know, in May when I made this decision, drove out and from New York. And I remember when they showed up, my mother telling me, I'm a little worried. I think your dad's going to quit his job over, you know, many, many years, because he's fallen in love with this, you know, starting in the Black Hills and South Dakota and the Badlands, and then out here. He got bitten by the bug pretty quickly. And so did my mom. They loved it. I mean, they saw what I was only hoping to find here and had found. And they got to experience that in their trip out and while they spent time in the park before we went back together. And that was cool. And if I might, I'll go a step further, because it became even more personal. Not long after I came back here in 90, I went home. My dad passed away. I went home for the funeral. And neighbors told me, and my father never told me this, but my neighbors told me that, you know, your dad was talking, he wanted to move out there at some point. My mom was in bad health and he was taking care of his mother too. And it's not a sad story, but the big piece of this I will always remember and meant so much was that he got it, so much so that he figured he'd be the last one standing in the family. And at that point, he was going to move out here too. And I thought, wow, how far have we come? And certainly that speaks, you know, that talks about the West. It talks about Yellowstone. And so, yeah,
that also had to make you feel like maybe you made exactly the right choice. I mean, when you're getting that kind of feedback from your dad or even from one of your dad's friends, maybe even more important, like he didn't say it to you, but he was saying it to his friends. Now you're like, you know, I knew it. I knew I was making the right choice. Here's a guy that spent his whole life working probably, and now he's longing to be doing exactly what you're doing right then. That's pretty cool.
It meant a lot. It totally meant a lot. And yes. And I kind of always knew he felt that way. I mean, again, even the first summer, and, you know, he came back out to visit several other times, obviously. And, you know, I some of the appeal of this place I share with him. I'm sure my interest in the outdoors, you know, I can thank him for that. My desire to be a cowboy as a kid, you know, he was one of those guys, he was always watching the Western movies as well and got me hooked on that. So, you know, all of that stuff that you don't maybe think too much about as a kid and all helps formulate who you are, you know, that's a lot of him. And here it is, you know, again, there's so many reasons why being here means so much, but I'm in the Cowboy Stadium in the world's first national park, and who'd ever thunk anything like that? Nobody in my family. And, certainly I didn't. And here we are. And, so yeah, I don't have any regrets. Every day is a beautiful thing around here. It's fun to think about all those things that led us to where we are today.
So tell me about how you ended up in the Everglades. Was that how I ended up in Key West? I tried to spend the winter in Wyoming and decided it's far too cold there. I went as far south as I could possibly get, and that's how I ended up in Key West. I was running, literally running from the cold, and then found a place where I thought, you know, this is pretty good. And what's wrong with this? But how did you end up in the Everglades for your 4 years there?
Well, it was, again, fate, I would say. I was in I mentioned my wife's from Georgia, and in our pursuit of each other over the years, you know, we'd get close and then farther away, you know, geographically. Well, I made it as close. She was in North Georgia, and I made it as close to Savannah, Georgia, and I was on the coast, Tybee Island, Georgia, and I was actually managing condominiums, and her sister actually helped set me up with that. And then it was just out of the blue. Mostly it was short-term rentals, you know, vacation kinds of stuff, people there for a few days or a week, but we had a few that we'd rent as apartments. And oddly enough, a woman ends up renting an apartment there for about 3 months, and great woman who ultimately I became very good friends with. And she was a park person also. She was in between seasons. She had worked out in the Utah parks, and she was heading to Everglades National Park as the personnel manager after she was done with this little, you know, free time, if you will, on the beach. And we were chatting, and we traded, you know, the quote unquote war stories of working in the parks, and both loved it. Well, she heads on. And I didn't really enjoy, the folks were great, but I didn't enjoy doing that job. Long story short, one day, not long after she leaves, she calls me and says, "We have a marketing job down here in Everglades. Would you ever be interested in moving and taking a full-time job in the parks?" And it happened to be the same company, the predecessor to Zantara, that was here in Yellowstone that I work for. They just gotten a contract in Everglades. So, and I wasn't really happy what I was doing. There was no guarantee, but and I was still single at that point, although chasing my wife. So I quit that job and literally packed up a cat and my van and drove down to Flamingo, Florida, southern part of, you know, everybody around Key West knows Flamingo. But and did an interview, if you will, and hope for the best. And I got the job, and I never thought of Florida really. I know very little about it. I've been there spring break a couple of times, but you know, I didn't know much about it. But I fell in love with the Everglades again. It's another national park. I love the outdoors. I never thought it's a, as you know, much more subtle place than these big mountains and big wildlife we have out here. There, you know, it's birds and it's things under the water and it's bugs as well and reptiles, but. I fell in love with it and got to live there and see, you know, wild Florida through the Everglades. And that turned out to be 4 incredible years. And it also, you know, to tie back to the romance piece, it was the kind of job then where my wife was a teacher by trade, ended up coming down to Everglades and then managing a gift shop. And it was while we were there that we got married. It was, you know, that job that we could start to, you know, build a life on. And so... 4 great years, 84 through 88, before I came back out here to Yellowstone.
Nice. So that's interesting. So now you're kind of, you and your wife are both working in the parks and you see that, I mean, I remember in my own life, there was this period where I was being a fishing guide and I just kind of thought of being a fishing guide as something you did in the summer. And I was surrounded by a lot of other people that felt that way. Until I started seeing some of these other more established, older guides that were married, that were raising their families as being fishing guides, and something clicked. And I was like, oh, this is something you can do. Like, I could just do this. This is a real job. Like, this is a job. This is a real job. And I could do this if I wanted to pursue this. And it really changed my mindset completely. And I started thinking of fishing as a career rather than a summer job. And so I would imagine that you and your wife are kind of in the Everglades and you're kind of thinking, okay, well, what's next? And how did the Yellowstone opportunity kind of present itself?
Well, that's a great question. And this is another part of the story that is not unusual, and I think it's really cool, and it's one of the other reasons I stayed here. I may have mentioned I was an art major in college, right? So I wasn't going to make a big living after college on painting and sculpture, but so this opportunity, I take the job in Savannah and Tybee Island managing condos, but I did have a little background just working in the parks, a little bit of that kind of customer service stuff. and I worked my way up. But long story short, I go to Everglades. That marketing job, I had done some advertising and some different things for the condos, but I did not go to school for marketing. But the point there is I had a good track record with my 3 summers for working for the same company in Yellowstone previously. So, and this company loves to promote from within, loves to train. So I literally go down to Everglades with a little bit of experience advertising the condos and this and that. But it's a small operation and a small marketing budget. And so, and they were willing to take a chance with a guy who had a pretty good, you know, reputation in terms of my working. And so I got to learn as I went marketing in the Everglades for the hotel operation. And at that point, it was a motel and there were some cottages and a restaurant and all that. So I got to learn. And that is not unusual. We love to promote from within. We love to train folks. And so the career opportunities, again, who'd have thunk way back when working in the laundry, but the career opportunities for folks that want it for advancement within the company are very good here. So that's where it started. My background in Yellowstone, I got a lucky break to apply for and get a marketing job. And by the way, as you know, Flamingo, it's year round, and so the Mosquitoes can be pretty rough. So it's not like it's on the top of everybody's list for places they want to live year round. So my experience in parks and love of parks helped me with that job, and because I wanted to be there, and that, you know, in that case was a big deal too. So here we are, and you know, my wife goes down there and ends up, she's a teacher by background, but she ends up working in and ultimately being able to manage a gift shop, did quite well down there. So she gets into management as well. And, you know, it continued on from here. I ended up coming back to Yellowstone because I had some pretty good success down there in Flamingo in the Everglades. And my gentleman who was the vice president and general manager here in who's also a conch, by the way, he was born in Key West.
Really?
He's the reason they got with it, that we went, even went after the Everglades contract way back when. His name is Steve Tedder, and I owe so much to him. Great man. He saw some possibilities, so he actually opened up or made a assistant director of marketing position out here in Yellowstone. And we had another gentleman who was my boss, John Olson, who was a VP or the director of marketing at the time, a lot of experience. So Mr. Tenner thought, let's bring Rick out here. Let's bring him back to Yellowstone. And that was a full-time job as an assistant director. And I got to learn under a guy who'd been doing it a long time. Now I'm back in Yellowstone, which I love and my wife loves. A little bit of fate, a little bit of hard work too, that got recognized. And so I've been able to learn as we go with some of the best. And it's because this company, you know, created some of those opportunities. And I'm not alone on that. Our general manager now started, I think, in a gift shop maybe way back when. You know, my former GM was a front office guy, and he ended up a vice president and a general manager of the whole show here as well. There's many examples like that for folks. You know, if you show a good work ethic, I guess, and have a little success, people notice it. We want to keep you here. So
that's cool. And so when you move back to Yellowstone, I can only imagine, as you're saying that, and you and your wife, did you have kids at this point?
Nope.
Okay. So you and your wife are leaving Flamingo in the summer. And well, I don't know if it was in the summer, but you had spent many summers there. You're leaving there knowing what the summer is, and you're getting off the plane or out of the car in Yellowstone. I can just imagine this reprieve from the bugs, from the heat, from the sunburn. Not that you're not getting sunburned in Yellowstone, but I mean, even Slough Creek at its worst is better than Flamingo at its best day of bugs. You know, that just seems like a serious reprieve.
Yes, it's bittersweet because, as you know, winters down there, there's times when there was no bugs. You could be running around without a shirt on in the weather and laying in the grass and no big deal. It's great. It was beautiful. And as you know, in the summer, you learn, just like you deal with winter out here, down there, you dress for the summer and the mosquitoes, and you make a run for the boat. I had a little boat, a little canoe, or the car, and something we used to call the Flamingo Flush. I'm sure everybody's got one. When you drive down, you crank up the air conditioner, drive down the road, open the door, and try to flush all the mosquitoes out that in the car with you. But you're right. And then coming out here, though, it was a big change. And it was springtime, by the way. I think it was maybe April when we came out. And we knew what it was. And I love Flamingo, and this is not a slam on Florida, but I have to admit, I like the drier air out here, you know, little less hot when it's hot.
Yeah.
But I believe me, I think about Flamingo all the time when I'm shoveling snow.
Yeah.
But by the way, I also have to laugh when people complain about mosquitoes and give me their war stories. Whatever, say what you will. Yeah. You got nothing. This is my take on that. But we came out here in the spring. It was great. And we drove out. We packed up everything and, you know, the old U-Haul and did that kind of thing when we came back here. And it was cool. It was a great reunion. Because I knew a lot of the same people that hadn't left, as we've talked about earlier. Some people, they get bitten by another kind of bug, which makes you want to stay in these parks. I will say this. That's April of 1988. I come back. And, you know, when June 8 of 1988, we had what was the beginning of the biggest fires ever. So it was another learning experience in the marketing world that immediate summer after we got back.
Wow. Well, you did a good job. I made it out there the next year. I must have heard about it somewhere. But that was
when you set a big fire, you're on the news every day. So
well, I'll tell you what, man, it was probably the easiest year. Looking in hindsight, it might have been the easiest year to get a job in Yellowstone. The summer after the fires, you know, a lot of people considered, oh, Yellowstone burned down. But I don't know. There were plenty of people out there. They hired too many room attendants, which is what I was. And that was great for me because I wasn't really there to make money. I was there to experience the park. And I would have 3 or even 4 days off a week sometimes because they just had too many people. They're like, does anybody want to volunteer to not work? Yes, me, please. And so that's what I did. Well, man, that is such an incredible story. And I still have so many other questions, but I do want to get to if somebody wanted to do that, if somebody wants to, and so in so many cases, it's a kid taking a gap year. It's college students with the summer off. It could be, you know, someone changing careers. I don't know. There's so many things, but I'm sure that gap years and kids taking a summer off of college have to be a major part of your workforce. If somebody wanted to go to Yellowstone or any of these other national parks that Xanterra works at, has the contractor, the concession, what's the process?
Well, it's pretty much all online. So it's, and I'll back up to and say, all those folks you mentioned, from college students, retirees, love, you know, it's a great opportunity for retirees. Some want to, you know, have all this great experience that they can apply here for a summer, accounting or, you know, certainly guest service or maintenance and things. Others just want to do something completely different. College students, certainly, the gap year deal. There's people that love to just work seasonally and will go from park to park, either with Xanterra or mix up different parks, you know, managed by different companies. In our case, though, if you put in, I think it's about 8 months a year with us, even as a seasonal, you can earn benefits and medical and such. But how do you do it? You the easiest way is to go to Xanterra.com, Xanterra.com, and there's an employment page, and that, you know, from there you can see what all the different parks and other opportunities there are within Xanterra, and start the process from there. Specifically for Yellowstone, you can go to our website. The easiest thing to remember if you're looking for work is yellowstonejobs.com, which is just part of yellowstonenationalparklodges.com. And once you get into it, we put all kinds of information out there about the jobs and videos and what it's like to live here. We bring in social media from all our employees. You can get a sense of what the employees are thinking and saying. So going to the website is a good place to start, learn about the opportunities that are available and the places where they're available. And then you know, it's an apply now scenario, and it's an online application that you can submit to us or, you know, to Xanterra for, you know, any of those other parks or opportunities. So in the big picture, it's not all that hard. Start with Xanterra.com or yellowstonejobs.com, and it should, you know, take you through.
There's got to be a ton of people. And when I was in the park this summer, I was in the park this summer. I'll probably be in the park in a couple of weeks. Again, a lot of international people working in the park. And that leads me to believe that there are a tremendous amount of applicants. So if somebody wants to do this, like, this is the question I get a lot. Like, how do you do it? And then how far in advance do you have to apply? And I'm like, I don't know. I'd apply as far in advance as you possibly could. But what do you think about that? Like, how do you have any kind of a frame of reference of how many jobs are available in the park, like when it comes to summer work?
We have in Yellowstone, I don't know across all of Zantara, but just Yellowstone alone, there's 2,700 seasonal positions. So that's not positions like I'm in year-round. That's just seasonal.
Right.
So it's, and we're probably the biggest, you know, certainly park operation, but within Zantara and within the park system, we'd be one of the bigger ones. So having said that, though, right now it's interesting times because, as you know, the economy's going pretty strong. Unemployment is very low. So it's times like this where it actually becomes a little more challenging to find folks looking for seasonal work. So it's a great time to want to, you know, come out to the park when the economy, you know, softens up a little bit. Unfortunately, there's more people looking for work, so it makes it a little easier to find seasonals. But either way, whenever you do it, that's the way to do it. The internationals are, a little side note here, I think are a real interesting piece. One of the reasons we work with seasonals is because we need more output. We need more people than oftentimes what we can get because college students have a short window, for example, and then during peak season, we've got a lot of them. But we've extended our season. We open in end of April, and last hotel doesn't close now until November. When you were here, I believe, certainly when I first started, it was a much shorter season. It was more like a Memorial Day to Labor Day operation, mm-hmm. a little bit on either side. But so, and we have a lot more rooms here now. Over the years, so it's a much bigger operation, and we need folks that span just a traditional summer break of a college student, and that's where the internationals help. The other cool thing about that, the internationals, though, it's an exchange program in many ways. It's a cultural exchange program, and when I met people from all over the country as a seasonal, I thought that was great. I used to tell folks, I can go anywhere in the country, and there's probably I know somebody whose couch I can sleep on for tonight.
Yeah.
But nowadays, you've got kids from around the world. And so seasonal employees, or any of us, now know people from, you know, different parts of the world. So there may be couches across the globe now where someone can crash for a night. And a side note on that, we mentioned my daughter's working here. One of this international thing, my youngest daughter really connected with the internationals when she was working seasonally. And I think it contributed to her deciding to go in the field of work she does. She's now at the University of Colorado in Boulder, and she's working in the office that is involved with international students coming and their admissions and helping them. And she's an advisor now in their process of going to school in the States.
That's
she
interesting.
She has friends. She really connected with the internationals while they were here, and she was working with them. So it's more than a job for a lot of people. It's, and I know several folks who met and married also, we'll talk about romance, folks from other countries that they met here. So anyway, we're looking for a lot of positions and people and that want this kind of deal.
With the internationals, what do they have to do to just get a visa, a work visa or something?
There are different types of work visas, J-1s and H-2Bs and all that. And we work, I think it's the J-1s is what we work with mostly, which is it's a cultural exchange thing, but it does allow them to work. And then it allows them to travel, those employees or students or those people. Once they're done working here, that gives them a little bit of time to travel. So, and that's what most of them do. They come here. In many cases, they want to improve their English. They want to see what this is all about. And then, and they want to see the country.
Wow.
So they make their money here, they leave it here. Yeah.
What an incredible way to do that. I mean, you're speaking if you want to improve your English, I can't imagine a better place than working somewhere in the park where you're interacting with a lot of people. You have every accent available in this entire country. I mean, Yellowstone is my favorite place to play the license plate game. You can get all 50 like in an afternoon, pretty much. So you're really dealing with people from every state and every region. And if you wanted to improve your English, I would imagine that you talk to somebody from New York and then you talk to somebody from Tennessee. That's two different forms of the English language. And if you can become proficient in understanding that, then you're pretty good, you know?
I told you I married a young lady from Georgia, and as I kid folks, it took us 3 years before we understood what we were saying to each other.
But I believe
in all seriousness, these students that come here, it seems to me the ones that I've had the pleasure of meeting over the years, more often than not, they already have. They're very good at understanding and speaking English. So I wonder how are you going to improve? There's a few that are still working on it. And then after living in, employee housing here and with others, from the States and from other countries. Yeah. I mean, there's no better way. You're immersed in the opportunity to speak and learn the language. No doubt.
Man, that is so cool. You spent so much time in really one of the greatest places, in my opinion, one of the greatest places in this country, and truly my favorite place that I've ever been. I mean, I don't know. It sounds kind of weird, I guess, but there's some sort of energy that I feel in Yellowstone that I don't feel anywhere else. I felt similar things when I went to Hawaii, when I was out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. I felt a real energy in Christmas Island. I feel that way sometimes on the ocean in certain special places there, but nowhere does it feel as strong as Yellowstone. And I felt it when I went to work there that summer. That was one of the things I was like, man, this place just feels different. It is. And you're on top of a super volcano. So of course there's energy everywhere. Like it is spewing out of the ground in many places and in the form of geysers and hot springs. And I mean, you are very, it's just a really cool place. I wonder, like when I was there, I started backpacking heavily and we tried to do as many trails as we possibly could. I wonder, in your experience, what's the thing that you've done in Yellowstone that you think is the wildest, craziest thing that you've done in your 28 years there?
Narrowing that down. But, I guess one of the first things comes to mind, I'm going to go back to that first summer. I came out in May. Because it may not be the wildest and craziest, but it certainly left its mark, and that's why it comes to mind so quickly, coming from New York State. And I was out here in early May, and I was one of the first people at location. And if you know Yellowstone, you know the Yellowstone Lake area, and I was at Lake Lodge. And so there's only a couple of people on location. So I go wandering out one day in May just by myself to kind of check out the area. And it's snowing. But I went off on a trail. In hindsight, probably not a good idea to go marching off by myself with no bear spray, no nothing. I don't even know if anybody used bear spray back then.
No, they didn't.
Anyway.
They had bells.
Yeah. So I go off in the snow. I don't even have a hat on. I mean, this is such a wild experience. I mean, even the weather is crazy wild. But while I was out, and I get off towards Pelican Valley, actually, but I hear a rumbling. And it's like, what the heck is going on here? And I kept going a little bit, walked up a ways, and then I realized what was happening. There was a herd of bison running towards my direction. They didn't know I was there. So I duck in the trees, and these bison come hauling by. And again, I've only seen this on television. I'm not even in the park for a week at this point. And I had seen some bison on the busting in, which was also incredible, to see them live for the first time. But it was another thing to be standing off a trail with some trees around me by myself in snow when a bunch of buffalo come running through and you hear the hooves and and I see this. And I wasn't all that far off the road, or that just sticks with me today as the real, real welcome to Yellowstone. There's a herd of wild bison, and I don't know what got them going and running, but they did, and they came my way. And I'm in this relatively harsh conditions in the snow by myself and just saw this happen. That, I don't know if it's the wildest, craziest thing, but it was one of the more impactful things. And it's,
right.
And it's why I'm here. Geysers and all that are great, and one of the many reasons Yellowstone, is as important as it is in the world, really, and why it's a park. But the wildlife is really what appeals to me. And bison are also, representative of the Park Service and of conservation. There's so many things and so important to Native Americans. If you want to, get a little spiritual here, there's so much about bison that mean a lot to a lot of people. And that day, that was my experience. I'm smiling ear to ear right now thinking about it. It was a little intimidating as well. Also, one realizes how small one is.
Yes.
And it's never getting the big picture. When I heard a bison come running by and there's no one around to help you. It's just me and a tree or a few trees at the point. But that was a pretty special day.
Yeah, that's incredible. And you can have so many experiences like that. And I think that a lot of people that have never been to the park or have only seen it on television or whatever don't realize how easy it is to get into one of the wildest places in this country, certainly in the lower 48. I mean, basically, you get off the road and you walk 400 yards and you are in it. You know, you are in, that could happen to you at any place. You could also see a grizzly bear. You could also see all kinds of things. And it is a wild place. And when you're in a traffic jam or you're just driving down the road, you just don't realize how incredibly wild it is on the other side of that hill and that you're looking at. And that was it's funny. We have a very similar experience in almost exactly the same place. First thing we did at my location was Lake Hotel. I was a room attendant there. First thing that we did was decide, oh, let's go on a hike. And we ask around, and one of the people like yourself that had been working there for a while are like, you know, go do Elephant Back Mountain. That's the closest, easiest hike there is. And of course, it was just like you're saying, it was snowing. There was still a ton of snow on Elephant Back. We were completely unprepared. We lost the trail. I don't know how you lose the trail on Elephant Back Mountain. It's marked as well as you can possibly get. You know, we just got back from there and I was just like, wow. I mean, I had an experience kind of like yours of realizing how small you are, realizing how wild that place is, realizing how easy it would be to really make a bad mistake there. And maybe we need to recalculate everything that we're doing here and not just go hiking off someplace that we don't. I mean, did anybody have a map? No. Did we have water? No. Were we carrying extra jackets and hats? No. None of that stuff. And you just find yourself completely unprepared and naive and just in a place that later there was a grizzly bear attack right there, not very many years ago. And then when I hear that, I'm like, wow, we were just tromping around up there on Elephant Back Mountain. First day in the park. Not a good thing.
I hear you. We're fortunate. In many ways, the place can be forgiving, our two examples.
Yes.
But in other ways, not always. So you have to, I mean, good we've learned our lessons and got out of that one alive, right? But
now with
a fond memory.
Definitely a fond memory. But then also so many of the things that I kind of keep in touch with the park. I try to follow Instagram and other social media that I can see what's kind of going on there. One of the most humorous stories that I have seen in the last few years is when someone found the baby bison and thought that it was cold and put it in their car and took it to the ranger station, which has to be the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. But in all of your years there, you have to have seen this story replay itself in various forms over and over again. Maybe not quite to that extreme.
They were well intended, although not a good idea. And it speaks to the fact that they don't know, they don't obviously live anywhere near a place like this that is a monument to wild places, right? And this is how it works. Bison are fine, thank you. And they grew up and they've been doing this for many, many thousands of years and will continue to do it. So that was, in some ways it was sad too, because that bison they weren't able to get it back with mom.
Right.
So that calf. But what I see, which is disappointing, but it's also, I spend a lot of time, a lot of us do, trying to help educate, if you will, folks, is that people largely don't understand wild. And so you know, not long ago, there was a picture that circulated, and some videos really too, but a picture that circulated from a gentleman reaching out to pet the nose of a bison. He was standing on a boardwalk and the bison happened to be next to the boardwalk and he reached out. There was a video not long ago of a young girl. Fortunately, she's not hurt, but she was with a crowd of other people that got too close to a bull bison. And after a while, the bison just decided to go, you know, clear out the area. And that
right.
Poor little girl got tossed quite far.
I saw that too.
Yeah. And, you know, with all the messaging, with all the efforts everybody makes to say they're wild, you're clear, don't get too close, you never know, they're unpredictable. I see it all the time. I live in Mammoth, which is, you know, wildlife central. And right now, the elk are, could be the mating season, the rut will kick in here anytime. So they're starting to gather. And they love my front lawn. I've got a lot of big lawn, a lot of grass.
They do.
And with that comes the people. And if I sit on my porch, I often have to intervene quite a bit with people wanting those selfies that are willing to not only get too close, but then they turn their back on the big animal or animals and start backing up, trying to find the animal, you know, as they're holding the phone up to get the selfie. It's like, where else in the world would a human being decide it's a good idea to get too close to an animal that's way bigger and turn their backs and then back up towards it to get a picture. But here, so that's the kind of, it's disappointing too. And you try very hard, you know, to help folks. Some folks don't want to listen, but it speaks to the fact that maybe we need more Yellowstones and national parks, because they just have no idea, other than perhaps zoos and, you know, domesticated places where animals are domesticated, and don't really understand the fact that that's a wild animal, and you may get away with it this time, and the next time you won't.
Right. I think that it is one of our country's greatest resources that the forefathers were wise enough to see the value of not just Yellowstone, but so many other places, and put them aside as national parks. I think that is one of the coolest things about living in this country. And a lot of people don't see it. A lot of these people that are making mistakes with wildlife are coming from countries where wildlands are not available. Wild animals don't exist except for very small ones. And, you know, how would they know? I mean, when I was there, people would ask me, like, questions that you couldn't even believe, like, when do deer become elk, and what time do they let the animals out of, you know, what if we're going to go to Lamar Valley, what time should we go, what time do they let the animals out? It's like, they don't, like, they don't let anything out, like, they live there all the time, like,
yeah,
but that's just not sinking, it's not sinking in, you know. But that is, it's such a great resource, and it's such an incredible opportunity for young people to experience it. And it does not have to be Yellowstone. I mean, it could be Yosemite. I have sent so many people to Yellowstone to work, and it has inspired them to go and do other things. My niece, my nephew, my son, his girlfriend, and probably 50 other kids from clients who have asked me how it was that I got started. And then they go home and say, hey, would you like to do something like this? And it's just such a great opportunity. It's so cool to hear from you, like, the opportunities that are available, even beyond just summer work, and how you could even make a career out of it, and that it's a legit thing to do. I mean, it's really cool to hear your story.
Well, thank you. I've been very fortunate, and I love sharing it. And I want to get others turned on to this idea, even if it's just to visit Yellowstone versus make a career out of it. There's so much to be gained, and so much upside, and it's hard to leave this place not being a better person for having visited it. And it's even harder to leave this place after working here and spending an extended period of time without being, you know, a better person for having been here. This place and other parks, it's no different. But Yellowstone is the world's first, right? So, and it is unique in that, you know, more geysers than any place else in the world. You don't see a lot of places like this. There's Western landscapes, there's wild areas, but, you know, between the wildlife and that super volcano referred to with all those hot springs and geysers, it's different. And it's been a place people have been coming from around the world for a long time as well. So it's an icon. And those of us who get to live and work here, I think universally consider it a privilege as well.
No, of course. Absolutely. It is such an incredible privilege to be in such a wild area, and then to have an opportunity to not only make a living, but to end up thriving there. Now, one thing that we didn't cover that people might want to know about, like, if you're just a, you know, somebody's thinking about their kid maybe going out there, like, how does it work? And I know this, but I'd like for you to tell the audience how it works with housing. Like, people are not having to find a place to live or anything like that once. Can you explain kind of the situation?
Sure. Yeah, for seasonal workers, there is in-park housing. The majority of it, I would categorize as dormitory style, you know, two to a room. In buildings that, you know, we have and manage, and there's somebody oversees the building and all that. So in that way, it's sort of like college, but we also have, in some cases, there's for managers, you know, you might have your own room, you'll have, there's even some cabins in certain areas, small cabins like that. There's also an employee RV park or parks in different places. So, you don't have to be a retiree, but it, oftentimes we do get retirees who love going from place to place. They're living in their RVs. And so now they can take them here, work for us this summer, and stay in an employee RV park. So it's mostly dormitory style, but either way, we provide in-park housing. And then with that, we have employee dining rooms at the different locations we manage. So, and that's, it's sort of, I would describe that as cafeteria style, where, you know, you go through a line, there's several hot entree choices, and, you know, the sandwich bar or salad bar or, you know, cereal and stuff in the morning, depending on what meal you're at. There's a whole staff that just takes care of feeding our employees. So, and it's a deduction. It's a cost thing. So it's pretty low cost too. And it's deducted from your paycheck, so you don't even have to think about it. Yeah. And with that, I mean, in addition to that living and eating, there's an employee recreation program here. There's actually some rec halls, gyms around the park, and there's intramural leagues and hiking clubs. And, you know, if you don't have a car, there's shopping trips into the gateway communities and such. So, I mean, that piece of the lifestyle for someone who wants to work here, whether it's a young person or a retired person, that's as much a part of it as it is the park itself.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
why I stayed.
Well, I was going to say, you know, for somebody that doesn't have a car, you know, Yellowstone is a giant place. But when I was there, there was opportunities to take the bus. I don't know if there are still opportunities how you would get to trailheads or you know, to see the park if you showed up there without a car. Are there opportunities for that?
We don't have, per se, a point-to-point transportation system here for employees, but the employees certainly can jump on any of the tours we have, and they do that a lot. What happens, though, two things. A, there are, and this is what I did the first year I came out here. Again, I didn't have a car either. So friends did. So I'd either join them when they were going someplace or, you know, from time to time they would lend me a car. So that's kind of how that works. We also, I mean, I don't know that I ever recommend hitchhiking, but it is something that happens here, and I did then. And it's not unusual to see a couple of people on the side of the road holding up a sign that says park employee, mm-hmm. and then something that says their destination, I'm going to Canyon or I'm going to Grant Village or whatever. And that's, so that still happens today. But so not necessarily point to point, but it seems to work out between people that have cars heading here and there. And then, as I mentioned, the rec department does trips into towns, gateway communities on a fairly regular basis, and employees can join that and go into places like Cody or Jackson, and, you know, might include a raft trip if, you know, they're setting that up as well, or it just maybe shopping in a movie.
That's cool. That's cool, man. Well, everybody I've ever sent there has had a great experience. You know, it's an incredible place. I really appreciate you talking to me today and explaining all of this. You know, it's just such an incredible opportunity, and I'm happy to have made contact with you because I really wanted to get in touch with somebody that could you know, explain the process and the opportunities and everything. And you know what? I got far more than I had ever hoped for. You did such a great job and you have such an incredible story. I was kind of thinking I was going to be talking to somebody that was off-site, maybe unfamiliar with the park and was simply, you know, in charge of processing applications, which would have been interesting and it would have made a great little 10-minute show. But your story is amazing. And, I'm gonna have to look you up when I get out there. My boys, both my boys now, because of my experience in Yellowstone and our experience going to Yellowstone many years as they were growing up, they both fell in love with it. They're both at Montana State University right now, so they're just up the road in Bozeman. And pretty much every free minute that my youngest son has, he's going to the park to try to film wildlife. And they love to fish and they love to hunt outside of the park, of course. But the park's just been such an incredible thing for my family. And then my son and his girlfriend have both worked there. My niece, my nephew, like I said, Everybody had an incredible experience. My nephew went back, I don't know, 3 years, I think. He worked at Roosevelt. My son worked at Roosevelt. His girlfriend worked at Roosevelt. And my niece worked at Canyon. So very, very good experiences all around. My niece went on to work at Mount Rainier this year. So she's kind of embracing the park lifestyle, kind of like you. Like, you know, I'm going to look for another job. I want to see a different place, and gravitating towards the park. You know, it's funny, and I want to just close on this. Whenever I go to a national park like Yellowstone, or I get this exact same feeling, the landscape couldn't be more different between Yellowstone and Flamingo, but there is a feeling with the people that work there, with kind of the government style buildings that are built in a lot of national parks. There's just this kind of feeling. How would you explain that feeling of what it is like to basically live inside of a national park? But when you visit a national park, when you go from Gardner to Mammoth, there's a different feeling. When you go from Cody to Lake, there's a different feeling. Like, all the buildings are different. There's obviously not as many people there, but there's just kind of a feeling that is different there. Do you notice that?
I certainly do. And I obviously, Gardner is just out the north entrance, so a lot of it's very similar. But perhaps what this ties to is the fact that there's a reason it's a park. You know, that piece of land was set aside for a particular reason, because it's got some other level of importance, maybe, you know, for significance in the world. Maybe I'm getting a little too lofty here, but I do, you know, you go through the entrance, you see the sign that says "Welcome to Yellowstone" or "Welcome to Everglades" or whatever. You know, you've entered something that's got its own level of significance. In a place like Yellowstone, is huge too, as you know. Everglades is huge, but and so yeah, from place to place, it is different. At Yellowstone's being the oldest park, I mean, there's stuff going on here before it was a park, and there's still evidence of that. There's history, I guess. So yeah, there's a legacy that one carries on when one lives here. The house I live in now is the oldest building in use in the park, and that's my residence. It goes back to 1884. And they call it the Nichols House. And the Nichols family has a lot of history and, you know, big part of this, of the early days of Yellowstone. And now Hollinghausen will be probably not regarded quite the same way, but it's assigned to that house now. And so when they did a history of the house, and my name's in the article now, my last name.
Wow.
I don't know if I'm hitting it exactly, but that's all that for me rolls together, why it feels a little bit different. And the people I met here, we talked about that. Some pretty cool people are dedicated to this place, and with the Park Service or with the concession, and from across the country. So it's a gathering place too, in many ways, of people and from their histories and backgrounds. So collectively, all this stuff kind of comes together in this park or any other park. And I don't know if I can put my finger on one thing, but yeah, it's a lot of things.
It's very interesting that you say it just like that, that you don't know if you can put your finger on one thing, because that's particularly or exactly why I asked that question, because I can never put my finger on it, but I can never quite put my finger on why it feels the same to kind of go and check in at Mammoth as it does to go and check in Flamingo, even though they couldn't be more different in so many ways. There's still this familiar feel. You have kind of the same, it kind of draws the same type of person to work there. It kind of draws the same kind of person to appreciate it and to visit it. And so there's just, I don't know, it's just a different feel, but I can't put my finger on it either. That's why I asked the question.
Sure. And I'll mention this, I don't mean to belabor it, but when you talk about Everglades, and that's natural Florida, if you will, you know, so it's pretty evident when you leave the metropolitan area in South Florida and you're in Everglades, and it's not metropolitan. It's the original Florida, and Yellowstone is that way. And any national park that's devoted to the nature side of it, that's what you're dealing with. And it's a lot less places like that these days too. So I think that adds significance to it. I learning about the River of Grass and getting a chance to meet Marjorie Stoneman Douglas at one point.
Really?
And learning about, she was very old at the time, but she was Donna Flamingo. And with Senator Bob Graham was there too. So it was an event and I got to meet her. And I read the book at that point and I learned a lot about Everglades and why it was so significant and what its challenges were. I got to be a piece of that for 4 years. And that's a special place for that reason. I'm drawn to the nature part. I mean, there's certainly historical parks and cultural parks. There's so many different things that can fall under a national park unit, all very worthy, but I tend to default to the nature side, which is what you do, I believe, too. So that's what means a lot to me. And so for a period of time, I got to be part of that ecosystem myself and this one here. And that again, I don't want to overuse it, but privilege is a word that comes up quite a bit for those of us. It's just not everybody gets to do what I do. A very small group of people get to work here at all.
But
as we talked
actually,
about, I get to live here, raise a family and everything.
Right. But as we near the end of this conversation, the opportunity is there for 2,700 people to experience something like that. You know,
vacation.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's
work.
There's no better way, in my opinion, to see the park than to work there, because now you're surrounded by people like yourself that have been there far longer than you have. You're getting these little tidbits of information that the general tourist isn't going to get. Like, you should go. This is the trail you should do. Like, that one's nice and it's nice, but this one has got a real incredible thing. Whatever it is that you're looking at. Oh, you like waterfalls? Oh, have you seen this one? And they send you to kind of a little more obscure place and show you how to link it up with two or three other hikes. And, you know, if you leave a car here and you do it this way, you're going to be able to see all of this. And it's just things that just the general tourist doesn't necessarily get, and that's one of the benefits of being an employee. Is you're kind of an insider and you have some inside information and you're surrounded by people that know a lot more than you do, so it's really cool. But we'll end it there, and I just want to thank you so much for sharing your story. It's really cool. The next time I'm in Mammoth, I'll drop by the Nichols house and see if I can say hello to you.
I've got a great porch and it's got some chairs set up and we can sit down and talk about this further. I'd love that.
You have coffee there, right?
Come by. I got coffee.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite things. Yeah. Sit on a porch and drink coffee.
I got
you. And look it out.
I have got, and we'll, and exactly what we'll do. I had some friends from Everglades actually here last night and we sat on my porch and we watched Elk come by and talked about our days in the Everglades and Parkston. So I hope I get a chance to introduce you to my porch.
Right on, man. Well, thank you, Rick, and congratulations on a life well lived. I have great appreciation for it. So thanks
again. I
got you,
and I appreciate you taking the time today to chat. Yeah,
you bet. And for everybody out there, you want to go work in a cool place, we just told you how. So we'll put all this in the show notes, all the links to everything that we talked about. And man, if you're interested, go do it. All right, thanks, Rick.
Pleasure's all mine. I really do look forward to meeting you in person.